I heard Elizabeth Edwards talking a few weeks ago, maybe a few months ago. And she was asked if after the death of her son she still believed in God. And she said, yes. She said, it's not the God she wanted, but it's the God that is. I was very moved by that. I was also very moved by what I would call the extraordinary clarity in her acceptance. And it seemed to reflect even into her husband. And you don't always see that in political candidates. But you could tell that they were touched by, and I don't mean just struck by, they were touched by a kind of devastating blow in their life. You can call it tragic. It certainly for them was inexplicable. It was sudden, I guess, a car crash. And suddenly everything that, or much of what their life had focused around was gone. And I can only imagine the depth of suffering that she went through, that they all went through. But they were definitely touched by the hand of what would appear to be irrational God, an inexplicable God. There was no way to understand what took place. No amount of human reason, thought, understanding will explain it. It's also irrevocable. And yet, I saw in them a kind of light that was shining, and it was shining in a sense because they had been touched by this all-powerful, inexplainable force. And I've been thinking in recent days and weeks about Yahweh, the biblical God, the God of judgment, of power, loving God and cruel God, as we are taught in biblical terms. A God that operates under its own wisdom and does not necessarily share that wisdom with us. And although we all operate in a theater in which that God is very present, most of us do not know that God. And most of us don't know that God because we aren't always touched by it. Touched by it in the kind of powerful, inexplicable demonstration of its power. It demands a kind of obedience, it demands a kind of allegiance. It requires, in a sense, our love and devotion, even though it can treat us in ways that are not acceptable to our conscious mind. I think the drama of being touched by that God is one of the most powerful awakening forces in the universe. It is certainly not a light touch often. It is often a very, very brutal touch. And you can see for some people it is never, ever accommodated. It never enters the bloodstream. It is never embraced. It's fought for the rest of a lifetime. One is embattled by it. But interestingly enough, even to be embattled by your hatred of that God, You are engaged with that God. And some people, like Elizabeth Edwards, at least from the interview I watched, seemed to have stopped fighting or hating what is and accepted it in a way that transfigured her. It made her more luminous, if you will. And of course, as we all know from the newspapers, her suffering is not limited to that. She's fighting the battle we all ultimately fight, which is with mortality itself. That's when most people finally get touched by this extraordinary power, when the power is about to tell you your life as you've known it is over. When that comes late in your life, it's often, for many people, a shock, totally unexpected. What do they mean it's over? Not like we haven't been told from day one it will end, but nothing in us is prepared for it, in most cases. When tragedy strikes, most people feel unprepared for it. And yet we see it happening all around us and feel it will never touch us, as though we are somehow blessed in the eyes of this all-powerful being. And for many people, that creates a kind of magical thinking. They think, well, what have I done right? Well, I've been good, I've done nice things to people, I go to church or synagogue, I do my prayers, and people walk around thinking, well, I've somehow propitiated this God, I've somehow stayed on this God's good side, and I'm blessed. And then something goes, boom, and you realize you're not blessed any more than anybody else. And you go, well, why not? What did I do wrong? And the lesson is, you did nothing wrong. You simply are in a world in which there is Yahweh, an all-powerful force that operates way beyond your understanding and causes suffering along with joy. It causes a yin-yang universe. It is possible, in spiritual terms, to, in a sense, look at this Judeo-Christian God as something like karma. Give it a little bit of a name, and you can kind of put it aside. And you can go into this Buddhist idea of transcendence. I can somehow transcend the Yahweh phenomenon. That somehow, by reaching into acceptance of what is, which is in a sense what Elizabeth Edwards did without Buddhism, somehow by opening to this portal of awakening into something deeper and more profound, one senses one can escape Yahweh, power, force, life in a certain way. And yet, I think the great teaching is Yahweh is still there. It is still manifesting. It is still, in a certain sense, affecting the realm of life and death. And even though you may transcend death, meaning that you may get to a point where you realize that there is this transcendent, ineffable being which you are, there is still an embodied, physical, manifested entity that is alive and running around in this world, and it has somehow something remarkably importantly to do with you. The idea that your spiritual life makes you somehow superior, better, more capable of dealing with the universe, the idea that your spiritual life somehow blesses you or protects you, may be true in some regard. It certainly points you toward what is. It certainly teaches you that by opening to what is, there is something greater awaiting. That what is the tip of a vast iceberg of existence, and you are connected to that. So spiritual life really does, in a sense, prepare you for Yahweh. It prepares you for this extraordinarily powerful truth. And that truth comes down to, in the end, that you will cease to be. And that you will probably suffer in ceasing to be. Awakening to that is a fascinating thing. Bless you. Awakening to that truth gives you something that I saw in Elizabeth Edwards' eyes, which is, if my son can die, I can die. That I too am mortal, that I too am subject to this awesome power of existence. And if I can accept that, I am no better than the canary that falls from its nest. I am no better than the cow led to slaughter. I am no different than anybody on the planet, anywhere on the planet. That I am one of multitudes, subject to enormous, enormous godlike force. And say yes to that. Something happens. Something comes about inside you. What comes about is a clarity, illumination, an awareness that you are, and that you are no better and no worse. You are what is. You are one with what is. And you live with a kind of knowing. Once you've had great suffering in your life, and most of us have not, but once you've had great suffering in your life, I think you live differently. I think you just live knowing that that's part of the whole. You don't live with it in fear in the way that you might have before it occurred. You live with it knowing that it's there and that somehow you can live alongside it, with it, as part of it, and know that it is an essential ingredient in human condition. The Hindus have a trinity of gods. They have a creator, a preserver, and a destroyer, and they are all equally important. Shiva is the destroyer, and in our culture, in Judeo-Christian terms, people who cannot accept Yahweh as the all-powerful create God and devil, because they can't give God the power of destruction or the power of suffering. And so we create a divided soul. In Hinduism, that's all God. God is all of those things, and they embrace the whole of it. And you see God at work in each form. And that's very, very powerful, because Shiva is just as important in its destructive capacity as Vishnu is in its preserving capacity and the Brahma is in its creative capacity. Rudi is really Rudrananda. Rudra was the wild side of Shiva, the destructive force in all of its insanity, if you will, in all of its ignoble, unceremonious awfulness. And yet he's our teacher, my teacher. He's really all about that part of Yahweh which one is told to fear. In the Bible, it's very much a fearsome force. But when I looked at Elizabeth Edwards and I looked into her eyes, I have to say, and forgive me for giving her so much credit here, but I saw a fearlessness. I saw a fearlessness. And I saw a fearlessness that came from the worst thing possible happening to her. What else could they do to her? What more could happen? You see that in Job. Job's love of God at the end is greater than the love of anybody who hasn't suffered. And God took everything away from Job. Everything. We all try to avoid suffering, and yet it seems in some way to bring something. We don't want it, and yet we want what it provides. We want that ability to go, "Thy will be done," knowing that thy will is not always joyous, knowing that somehow this world is truly yin and yang, not in the simple the balance part that you see with that beautiful little logo of yin and yang, but in the most powerful sense of destruction and creation. And we are all part of that. We are one with that. We are that. And our spiritual work really has to embrace the Buddhist idea of transcendence and the creative, destructive power of Yahweh. That is what we have to do. It's what our calling is as spiritual beings. And whatever life will bring us, it will be our teacher. We will learn from the calmness and the sweetness of a very gentle life. We will learn from the enormous upheaval of a dramatically affected life. But you have to be willing to take it all. And you have to know that all those forces working on you will be ultimately, if you believe this and trust it, liberating. And that's what our practice is. We sit here and we are reminded of our connection to Yahweh. We're reminded of people like King David, who was a shepherd, extolled God in every word that he seemed to speak, and in his psalms. And his psalms were just in praise of this God. But David got too proud. Even David got too proud and did something that really offended God. And what did God do? God created great suffering for David. Was it a punishment? Yes, on some level. What is the result of that punishment? One can only assume that David understood repentance, and David in the end awakened to the fact that you have to pay homage to that powerful God. You cannot get arrogant in his presence. We are simple, tiny beings in the existence of Yahweh. So, performance of Joan of Arc the other night. And it was a wonderful performance and a wonderful show, but one of the moments in the show was Joan, who speaks to God or to angels all the time, says to these men of the church, when they ask her why they don't hear God and why she does, she says, "Well, you could. Listen. Sit still and listen. You don't stop to listen to God." And I realize that's really the problem. That's really the universal problem. People don't stop to listen to the silence within. That's it. If you stop long enough, whatever that is, which every person in this room does in their meditation, you stop long enough, you hear being the wrong word, perhaps some of us hear, Joan heard, but you feel or know or touch this thing. And it may not be the depth and wholeness of God, but you touch the fabric of God. You touch the hem of the robe, and you feel this thing in you, and you go, my sense of it is you feel lucky to be allowed to touch this. And all it takes is sitting still, being quiet, remembering to do it. And it's so easy to forget that. And you watch the people with Joan of Arc, who are so tormenting of her. And they're all men of high order. They're all men of God. And yet none of them knew God, because they were all of the world, of the earth. We have to sit and know God. We have to sit and know ourselves. We have to sit and touch the stillness within us to live our lives. It's really the only way to live. It's the only way to find direction, to find who you are, what your life is about, what it's for. You have to sit and do that. It's not a big deal. And the amazing thing is, and I repeat this weekly, God is, in Rudy's terms, a 1/16 of an inch away. It's not like you have to drill through the universe to get there. All you have to do is step back and go, oh yeah, oh yeah. And what you are touching in truth is Yahweh. You are touching the Judeo-Christian God. You're touching Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva. You're touching the Buddhist ideal of no name, no space, nothing, the void, emptiness. It's all there. You're touching that. You're one with that. And it illuminates you. And when the real suffering comes, and you know, it will happen. I mean, if nothing else, one day you have to suffer the loss of this. When suffering comes, if nothing else, you have some attunement to that stepping back and finding that force in the midst of your suffering. That's the great gift of meditation, of sitting still, of prayer, of coming back to yourself. That's the gift. You simply step back and know that you are one with this thing of creation, preservation, and destruction. So don't fool yourself that you're Buddhists or you're meditators and that you are no longer subject to the laws of the Judeo-Christian Yahweh. It's not true. You are subject to the power of a vengeful God, if you will, although you may not use the word vengeance, but you are subject to the power of a God that you cannot understand, whose operation in your life is beyond conception. And yet, when you understand, it may not be the God you want, but it's the God that is, that will awaken you to something tremendous. Any questions today? Okay. Blanche and I are going off to Los Angeles in the middle of August for 2 weeks, and I will give you all those dates, but I think we'll be here for the next 3 weekends. Thank you guys for coming.